are here in this audience, and also Lynn Matthews, working at the ESTAC Observatory, and my old colleague Eric Gérard at the Observatory of Paris. And we are interested in red giant outflow, so we know already from the talk, the previous talk in particular of Sophia Ramstedt, that they have slow winds and with huge mass loss rate. And we know the expansion velocity from the width of the molecular line line profiles, for instance CO here in this case, and we can estimate the mass loss rate from the modeling of this line profile. And with time, they fill circumstellar shell, which can be very extended. And we know that mainly from infrared observation. So for instance, here you have the image of the circumstellar shell around a carbon star, YCVN. It has been obtained by the Infrared Space Observatory at 90 micron. And you see that the shell is huge. It has a size of about 0.5 parsec on the sky, but the region which is probed by molecular line is only the central part, which is here. And from this central part, we have a CO emission, which shows a line profile, which gives you the expansion velocity of about 8 kilometers per second, and the modeling of the CO line gives a mass loss rate of about 10 minus 7 solar mass per year. So what about the extended shell? Can we extrapolate the data that we have obtained from molecular line to the Antarshell? Obviously, it seems difficult. And we want other probes for the kinematics of this circumstellar shell, this extended circumstellar shell. And the probe that we have selected is the H1 line at 21 centimeters. And the reason is that atomic hydrogen should be protected from photodissociation by the surrounding interstellar medium. It has a line at 21 centimeters, which unfortunately is extremely weak, but which means that in the most practical case, the line will be optically seen, which may be practical for the interpretation. The frequency is quite low, 1.4 gigahertz, which means that the Planck function and the opacity function will simplify. The Planck function becomes proportional to the temperature, the opacity to the inverse of the temperature. So the measured flux in a beam is independent of the temperature and gives you an estimate of the column density in hydrogen, which means that, in principle, the emission in the H1 line should be a good tracer of morphology. And if the distance is known, then we could estimate by integrating spatially the emission, we can estimate the mass in atomic hydrogen, which is potentially complementary to what gives the molecular line, which gives the mass loss rate. Assuming that most of the hydrogen is not hidden in other forms like ionized hydrogen or molecular hydrogen. A drawback of this line is that it is at a long wavelength, so the spatial resolution is relatively low. For instance, with a single dish at Nancy, we have a spatial resolution of 4 arc minutes in right ascension, with the Green Bank telescope about 9 arc minutes, and with an interferometer like the VLA, in practical case, it's 1 arc minute. Another drawback is that we suffer from the competing emission by the interstellar medium, which is everywhere, especially concentrated in the galactic plane, but it is everywhere. And also, the galactic plane is where we expect to find most of the stars. So it means that we will be limited to nearby stars, and preferentially we will look at high galactic latitude. So now we come back to YCVN. So with a spatial resolution of 4 arc minutes, so with the Nancy beam in right ascension, you see that basically we will resolve the shell with 3 spatial elements. And mainly we will do spectroscopy. So here is the line that we obtain in the direction of this shell, and you see that when you compare it to the CO line, it is much narrower than the CO line. So it means that we are seeing something different. It means that we are seeing material that is probably been slowed down and that is concentrated in this kind of donut. And this this interpretation has been confirmed by recent observations that we have obtained at the VLA. You have here the isophot obtained at the for the emission H1 emission at the VLA overlaid over the ISO image, and you see that the isophot fits relatively well with the ISO image. So the first conclusion is that we have a line that is much narrower than the CO line, and it means that H1 is probing a region where the stellar outflow has been slowed down. And the centroid velocity of the H1 is the same as the centroid velocity in CO, and it is the same as the centroid the radial velocity of the star. So this region where the matter has been slowed down shares the same space velocity as the central star. So H1 is revealing a shell which is quasi stationary around the central star. So now I want to make a digression on the line broadening by the Doppler effect, for especially for H1. So the line can be broadened either due to the thermal, to the temperature, or to the kinematics. So for a Maxwellian distribution of the particle, projected on the line of sight, the line profile should be Gaussian, with full width half maximum, which is proportional to the root square of the temperature and inversely proportional to the atomic, to the mass of the particle. So for a gas at 1000 Kelvin, you see that the full width half maximum of an H1 line will be about 7 kilometers per second, whereas for a CO line, it will be 1.3 kilometers per second, which means that the H1 line is much more sensitive than the CO line to the temperature of the gas. Whereas for the broad motion of the gas, whereas it is expansion or turbulence, the effect on the line profile is the same. So now we go back to YACVN. So we see that the line has a full width half maximum of about 3.1 kilometers per second. So from the relation we have seen in the previous slide, it means that the bulk of the material is at a temperature at most of 200 Kelvin. And if you take now the broad kinematics of the material, it means that the bulk of the material is expanding at most 1.6 Kelvin. So we have a constraint on the velocity and the temperature from the narrowness of this line. So from CO observation, we know that we have a freely expanding wind at 8 kilometers per second. This wind is supersonic. So it means that it has been stopped abruptly by a shock. And if we take the simple case of a monoatomic adiabatic gas, the Rankine-Gugno relation gives you that through this shock, the velocity should drop to 2 kilometers per second, 8 divided by 4. It's almost what we want. It's almost what we want. But at the same time, the temperature is increasing proportionally to the square of the expansion velocity, 8 kilometers per second. So it means that after the shock, the temperature should be 1800 Kelvin. It's much more than what is allowed by the width of the H1 line. So it means that the gas should slow down and it should cool down further out within the shell, which is revealed by our H1 observation. And in a time which is the time needed to build this structure. So this is described, in fact, by very well described in the textbook of Lammers and Cassinelli. They have this drawing, which is taken from this textbook. So you have an expanding wind with terminal velocity here. Then the velocity is going down abruptly by a factor of 4. And then the density is increasing, conversely, by a factor of 4. And then the material is cooling down, is heated first through the shock and then cooling down. And the density is increasing through the detached shell. And you have the reverse situation on the outer boundary, the interface with the interstellar medium. So this is a schematic of these figures. And Liebert had done a small 1D model based on this description and using the equations that Jorik gave us in the introductory talk of yesterday. And he could fit the line profile that we have obtained at Nancy with this simple model, assuming a constant mass loss rate of about corresponding to the mass loss rate observed in CO for about 5, 10 to the 5 years, with the temperature dropping from 2000 Kelvin to 1000 Kelvin through the detached shell. So this was satisfactory, but then we obtained the observation at the VLA with a much higher spatial resolution. So again, here, what you have seen. Here's the image that Sophia Ramset showed yesterday. And you see that, in fact, there is a small distortion of the shell with respect to this axis, which corresponds to the direction of motion of the central star, which has a space velocity of about 35 kilometers per second. So the situation has been reanalyzed by Ohai in her thesis, and she could fit the spectral map obtained at the VLA with, again, the same kind of model as the first one, but adopting a distortion of the circumstellar shell in the direction along the space motion of the star. But for doing that, she had to assume a mass loss rate which is lower than the mass loss rate that we observe now in CO, which means that we cannot adopt the hypothesis of a constant mass loss rate for 5, 10 to the 5 years. We should take into account the evolution of the star and the evolution with time of the mass loss rate. So YCVN is almost a textbook case. It shows that H1 shells are persistent structure where stellar matter is accumulating with time, and that we need a proper modeling taking into account the interaction with the surrounding medium and taking into account also the stellar evolution. And we need also better data because you see with the VLA we just are able to see with the signal to noise of one the freely expanding winds with these two horns, but they are barely detected. And we would like to improve the modeling and to constrain the inner boundary of the circumstellar shell. We would like to have a better sensitivity in the central part of this shell. So we have observed also other sources, and in general, what we see is that we see a head-tail structure with matter so accumulating here close to the central star, and then matter stripped in a direction opposed to the stellar motion of the star. In all cases, we observe narrow spectral lines, 3 to 5 kilometers per second. And sometimes we observe a gradient in the centroid velocity along the direction of the tail. So I would like to zoom on this star, on this star, RSCNC. So this is the best image we have presently of an AGB star in H1. So you see the tail here again, the head, and you see also some clumps of matter around the tail. And such clumps of matter are predicted in some 3D hydrodynamic models like those of Eva or Chazren or Jana Allard. So we would like to have enough sensitivity to be able to resolve the kinematics in these clumps, but presently the sensitivity is not enough. On Rx Leporis, so the image was already shown by Sophia yesterday, and you see that it has a very peculiar structure, like a kind of detached shell, but with intensity much higher north and south of the central star, which is represented here. And one possible hypothesis, as that was mentioned by Sophia, is that the Maslow threat has been interrupted and resumed later. Another possibility that is under investigation by OI is that, in fact, the matter from the stellar from the star is flowing preferentially along two opposite directions, and that what we would see is, in the detached shell, matter accumulating with time corresponding to this outflow. So it is another hypothesis for this. So you see that we are scratching the upper part of the topic, and that we need more better sensitivity, and we need also to have it with a good spatial resolution and good spectral resolution, like for all cases. And we are in a new era with a new radio telescopes that will soon become available, like the Meerkat radio telescope in South Africa, or in nearby China, the FAST radio telescope. And it will have a huge collecting area, about five times the collecting area of the VLA, with a receiver system with 19 receivers. So it will be a very efficient radio telescope for mapping large area of the sky, unlike the nearby circumstellar shell we are interested in. So now the concluding remarks that H1, I hope you are convinced that now that H1 can provide unique information on the kinematics and physical properties of the gas in the extended shells around red giants. However, the emission is weak because the line is basically is forbidden, and the confusion by galactic H1 emission can be extremely challenging. So present observations are scarce. And the advent of a new generation of powerful radio telescopes, such as FAST, will open certainly fascinating new possibilities for studying. There's H1 structure, which have been revealed first by the NRT and then by the VLA. And I have shown three different cases, YCVN, RSCNC, and RX-Leporis, which illustrate the need for a 3D hydrodynamic modeling incorporating the motion of the star with respect to the interstellar medium, but also possibly an axis symmetry in the wind of the central source, and also the evolution of the central star. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for Thibault? Comments?
Well, what you're saying in the last remark, in fact, if I mean the ISM and the asymmetry of the bipolar outflow don't have to be modeled together. In fact, they can be completely independent because the internal part is not going to see what is happening outside because you have the shock structure. So, I mean, yes, modeling everything at the same time is very challenging and difficult, but it can be modeled separately and yes. Be fine with it.
Okay, it's excellent news. Thank you.
Other comments, questions?
Thank you. So what you're seeing is apparently the atomic hydrogen flowing out from the star, but do you never see the atomic hydrogen coming from the photodissociation of H2 in the external parts of the envelopes?
Yes, it seems indeed. It seems that for stars which are losing mainly hydrogen in molecular forms, you would expect that at some distance from the central star, the molecular hydrogen is photodissociated by the like CO, but further away. And in fact, up to now, we have seen no evidence of this effect. We have not detected it. If it exists, we have not detected it. And we suspect that the wind is still clumpy at large distance from the central star, and that the molecular hydrogen is protected in this clump. It survives in clumps. So it's a puzzle, but we suspect that far from the central star, the wind is still clumpy, and that molecular hydrogen survive further away than expected by the models.
Yeah, that might make sense. I don't know if you know Myra and this Galax long tail. That's supposed to be excited H2, right?
Yes.
Excited by molecules. So it seems like the H2 is there still on long, long scales.
So in fact, Myra seems to be losing, seems to be just at the edge of the population of star, losing mass mainly in atomic form or mainly in molecular form. So a part of the mass is in atomic hydrogen, a part of the mass is in molecular hydrogen, and you see both species quite far from the central star. In fact, I have here an image of the Myra tail seen by Galax, and you see in the far UV, the emission is supposed to be due to molecular hydrogen excited by the electron produced in the shock. And along this tail, we have observed in H1 with the Nansei telescope. So you see this elongated beam of 4 by 22 arc minutes, and we detect H1 all along the tail. So H1 and H2 seems to coexist all along the tail, and we don't know. It's a puzzle, but presently we have not found any evidence of photodissociation of H2. But it's really a puzzle, one of the many puzzles.
Okay, thank you. If there are no more questions, can we have the next speaker? Oh, you have one more. Can the next speaker come up, please?
Yeah, if you go to earlier type stars, you get to another boundary.